Tonight I wanted to do something a little bit different. I wanted to share some perspectives or things that crossed my mind based on current events recently. So two particular events. There's a third event that I don't want to talk about yet, but maybe some later time. But two particular events. One is the Petira of Harav Aaron Leib Steinman, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, and a couple of things that came up in that context. The two things that came up in that context and about that event that I was asked about was, first of all, they made a lot was made of Rav Steinman's tzava'a, the first item of which was, I greatly beseech that no one be maspid me, neither in front of me nor not in front of me. And he went on to say, and I don't want any articles written about me, I don't want, and it's ki'ilu someone read through the tzava'a, item by item, 1 through 14, I believe there are 14 items of the tzava'a, and you know, just did everything that he said not to do, you know, like immediately as he died. You know, oh, not to be maspid, check, you know, not to write any articles, a pull-out section of Mishpacha, not to, you know, like just going through. Is that okay? Is that okay that we just completely ignored his tzava? So this was done with consultation with Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and it was paskined apparently that it was okay. So the question is, why is it okay? Meaning, what's the basis of such a psak? So that is one issue that I thought was interesting. The second issue that I thought was interesting that came up with Rav Aaron Leib, and I don't know if this story is true. It was sent to me, and I was able to find it on the Yeshiva World News when I was looking around, but at no other website was I able to find it. They claim that what happened at the Levaya of Maran Agon Rav Aaron Yehuda Leib Steinman Zecher Tzadik Levracha, they claim that the story was revealed how he was secretly whisked from the scene of the Levaya to a kavura with only 30 witnesses, that the police chief of Tel Aviv district drew far-reaching conclusions following the deadly tragedy that took place during the funeral of Hagon Rav Shmuel Alevi Vosner Zatzal. Police began preparing, listen to this, they began preparing for the potential Levaya of Rav Steinman Zatzal a year and a half in advance, when that dreaded day would come. Meaning as soon as, if you remember, by Rav Vosner's Levaya, it was absolute chaos. It was terrible. There were people that were trampled. Someone was killed. I think it was at least one person that was killed. Many, many more that were injured at Rav Vosner's Levaya. So the police realized they need to do better next time. So they started thinking immediately, okay, who's next? So they said, what's going to be the next major Levaya? So they were preparing for Steinman's Levaya and exactly what they were going to do a year and a half in advance. And it's amazing. The story that they tell is, again, I don't know if this is verified by any other real news sources, but the story that they tell is that there were a fleet of ambulances, one of which contained the Aron of Rav Aaron Leib, and the entire fleet of ambulances stopped in front of Rav Aaron Leib's house, where they were doing the Hespedim, and then one of the ambulances just kept on going very slowly with a couple of police cars near it, just kept on going. That as the Hespedim were going on in front of Rav Aaron Leib's house. Now, that one ambulance that kept on going was the one that had Rav Aaron Leib's Aron in it, and they got to the cemetery and they pretty much buried him by the time the Hespedim were over, so no one was able to, there was nothing to rush toward because there was no body there anymore. You know, the trampling was everyone rushing to get closer. I don't know what they plan on doing when they get closer, but everyone rushing, you know, to get closer to the Aron, and that's what they managed to avoid. And as the article reports, Rav Aaron Leib wanted a kavura with only a few people there, and he got it for different reasons, but they did this for security reasons. So it got me thinking about an email that I got a couple of weeks ago and I had neglected to respond to, but here's the email that I got a couple of weeks ago. It was from a guy, I think, in Israel, and he writes as follows. My 93-year-old grandfather has pretty intense cancer throughout his body. The doctors have given him a few months to live. Baruch Hashem, he's not in pain, so that is good, and he's still in great spirits. My question is that I would definitely like to speak at his funeral come 120, but seeing as it could come at any point, and the minhag in Yerushalayim is to bury on the same day, I was wondering whether it would be appropriate and whether there is any issue with writing out a hesped before he passes away so I can honor him properly when it does happen. Meaning this idea of preparing in advance for the patira, like how much preparation is permitted in advance or is appropriate in advance. That's what the Rav Aaron Leib story reminded me of, that email that I never that I never responded to. Hopefully this will be my response. Hopefully the guy will listen to the shiur. Maybe I'll actually go and respond to him also. But so that's the second issue. Third issue is not really a halachic issue, but a lot of people have been asking me about this today, and I assume have been asking, people in other communities have been asking their respective shul rabbis. Yesterday, Shalom Rubashkin was freed from prison because President Trump commuted his sentence, right? Well, it wasn't a pardon, it was a commuted his sentence. And there was a massive celebration in Crown Heights last night. It was all over social media and the news. The secular news sources picked it up as well. Thousands of people coming and band playing and drinking and everyone going and shaking his hand and kissing him and whatever. Like a massive, massive celebration. So a number of people asked, like, what's our approach to that? Meaning, he went to prison not for mitzvos and ma'asim tovim, right? He went to prison because he did something that was a crime by the standards of by the laws of our country. So, is that something that is worthy of a massive celebration? What's the Torah hashkafa of that event, how it did play out, how it should play out, what sort of sensitivities we should have. So those are the three issues. So first we have the issue of ignoring the tzava of Rav Steinemann. We have the idea of preparing in advance for someone's patira with a hasped, and the Rubashkin issue. Any preference? We have one, and we have two, and Rubashkin. Okay, so we have an even vote. I don't know what to... I have to decide. Do you think we can get through all of it?
Yes.
Yeah, let's try to go through all of it. Okay. So we'll go 1, 2, 3. We'll go, meaning in that order. So we'll start with the first one. The tzava of Rav Steinemann, like I said before, included that there be no espedim, not befanav and not shalom befanav, that there be no articles written about him in any newspapers, not to publish his picture, no biographies published about him, no signs printed about the Levaya, no announcements on loudspeakers or radio. He did not say on internet, but I assume that was probably included as well. To do the kvura as quickly as possible, and that he should be buried amongst regular people, not in a chelek harabanim or anything like that, and that there should be no titles on his matzeva. It should just say Po Nikbar Rabbi Aaron Yehuda Leib Ben Rav Noach Tzvi Steinemann, and that's it. That's all he wants written on his matzeva, and the matzeva should be cheap, simple. He shouldn't waste money on things like that, on expensive cemetery plots and expensive matzevas, v'chule v'chule, meaning everything. And then he gave, some etza, that if you want to do something, li'ilui neshama, you should learn a parak of Mishnayis every day until the end of your Beis Chodesh of Saks. Referred to this the other day. Women should recite Pirkei Tehillim every single day, even on Shabbos and Yantif, he suggested, and he says not to publish his writings except the ones that he reviewed and was and approved of their publication, which is also an interesting element of the tzava. Do you have to listen to that? If someone says, this is my Torah, and I tell you, I don't want this Torah publicized. I'm not confident enough in it, but you think it's beautiful Torah, and you think it's fantastic, and you think it should be publicized. So again, there's a major issue now with some of Moshe Shapiro's Zichron Levracha's Torah being published, that there's some major sichsuch between the family and some of the people that are publishing his Torah, that they were not comfortable with what they're publishing. So specifically, I want to talk about the hesped issue, because that's a beferish Gemara. That's explicit. The Gemara discusses in Masech Sanhedrin and Daf Mem Vav and Beis. The Gemara raises the shaila: Yibayilu hespeda yakre dechayi havi or yakre deshichvi havi. What's the purpose of a hesped? Is it to honor the living, meaning the family members? It's a great honor for the family members when they say such nice things about their karov. Or is it to honor the deceased? So the Gemara says, "My nafkamina. What difference does it make? You have to do a hesped either way. Who cares who you're honoring?" So da amar lo taspedu alehu gaver. The Gemara says, "Nafkamina is the guy says I don't want a hesped. He's mochel on the hesped. So if it's yakr dechayi, it's for the honor of the family. He can't be mochel his family's honor. But if it's for his own honor, he absolutely has the right to be mochel his own honor." So the Gemara said, brings a raya. Vayavo Avram lispod l'sarav l'ifkosa. V'yam mishum yakrad d'chayu, if it's for the honor of Avram, mishum de yakrad Avram, mashul al Sarah, because of the honor of Avram, they kept Sarah from being buried immediately. So the Gemara says, yes, Sarah gufa nichala. Sarah wanted that. Ki echad yakrad Avram. Sarah spent her whole life honoring Avram. She wanted to give the honor to Avram, and that's gufa what she wanted. So that's not necessarily a raya. The Gemara brings another raya. Okay, so a couple of other rayas, whether it's yakrad d'chayu, yakrad de Shichvi. How do we paskin? Shulchan Aruch in Yardea, Simin Shin Mem Dalet Sif Yud. Mi Shetziva, Shalo Yaspaduhu. A person says, I don't want you to be maspidly. Maspid me. Shomin lo. We listen to him. You're not maspid, a person who says, I don't want you to be maspid me. Black on white in Shulchan Aruch. That you listen to the person. So what? Chaim Kanievsky, I think he chazes Shulchan Aruch every year. So he doesn't know the halach. Of course he knows the halach in Shulchan Aruch, but he probably learns Pesachei Tshuva also. Pesachei Tshuva, on the bottom of the page in the Shulchan Aruch, discusses why it is that throughout the generations, for centuries, the halach is one way, and the minig is the other way. You know, the halacha is that you have to listen to the person, not be maspidim. But Gedolei Yisrael, throughout the generations, have said, don't be maspid me. And they were subsequently ignored, and people were maspid them. So Pesachei Tshuva on the spot in Yeridea writes, Ein ber heitiv shel Rav Maritzal, shekasa b'shem tshuvas beis Yaakov, simen pei gimel. The gadol ador shemeis v'tziva shelo laspido. If a gadol ador dies and says, "Don't be maspid me," hamekel shelo l'shmo l'chach malaz lo hifsid. If you're mekel and you don't listen to them, you don't lose out from being maspid them. Doesn't explain why. And then he quotes another example in Poskim. Tshuva me'ava, chelek alef sim kufay and dalet. Who was the Tshuva me'ava? One of the leading talmidim of the Nodabi Yehuda. So Tshuva me'ava writes that the Gon Bala Nodabi Yehuda Zal said at the time that he was maspid the Pnei Yeshua, that even though the Pnei Yeshua said, I don't want any espedim, Nodabi Yehuda said, I don't care. I'm going to be maspid him anyway. And ain't shomen though. We're going to be maspid him anyway. Why? Because he's Rabban Shal Kol Bnei Agola. And he says, so the Tshuva Me'ava says, where's the heter? It's a sugya, we pass him Shulchan Aruch. Where's the heter? So he's shakal v'tariba, v'siyem she'ein lo heter barer levatel devrei ha'meisel ha'speed v'makam v'sham ha'al tasbideini. And Tshuva Me'ava says, I don't get it. My Rebbe gave us with Bnei Yeshua. I don't get it. I don't find a heter barer why you could be maspid such a person. And when the person says he doesn't want to be, he doesn't want to receive a hesped. In Sefer Yikarim of Rav Shlomo Eger, he writes also that he gave a hesped for his father, for Rabbi Akiva Eger, even though Rabbi Akiva Eger explicitly requested that there not be any hespedim. So it would probably be wise of great chachamim, when they make their tzava, when they make their request, to realize that they're likely not to be listened to, and maybe to modify the request a little bit. You know, if you shoot a little lower, maybe you can, if they say only family members be maspid, okay, so maybe they'll fulfill that or something like that. Yeah.
Two questions. First is that, does the Gemara Kiddushin say that Tanakam Shem Machal Kodo Machal is
because Delehu? Because Torah Delehu.
So why doesn't he have a right to be Machal on his cover? Meaning, like, is in this case by him, but the
hesped
that he's getting
aren't. First of all, who says he doesn't? Meaning the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you have the right to be mochel, and that if he says don't be maspid, you're not supposed to be maspid.
Against the Pesach
Yeshua, okay. Also, just right. Meaning, what the Shulchan Aruch says also has nothing to do with Torah. Has nothing to do with Talmud Chacham. It's in general hesped is for the honor of the deceased. Pesach Yeshua seems to be saying, oh, but by Talmud Chacham, you should dafka be, not dafka, but apparently there were Gedolei Yisrael that were maspid him anyway. So I found this somewhat interesting, because when we say that that Yakrid is Shichvi, and therefore he has the ability to be mochel, what's the Gemara really saying? Is the Gemara saying that he can be mochel and therefore there's no chiyuv to be maspid him? Or is the Gemara saying he can be mochel and therefore it's usser to be maspid him? I mean, what happens with that mechila? Mochel, I don't want a hesped. Let's say your father says, I'm mochel, don't get me a cup of water. I'll go get it myself. Is it usher for you to go grab him a cup of water? You see, he's thirsty. He needs a cup of water. He says, oh, I'll do it myself. And you do it for him. Is that usher? You've just violated an isser? Av shemochel kvodo mochel. Right? The Gemara Kedushin passes that also, he could be mochel on his kavod. It could be, he could be mochel on his kavod, because Ritzon Shel Adam, Zehu Kvodo, the way we define kavod is what he wants, and if he says they don't want, so then that's, Rav Shachter gives the example, you know, a father says, don't put on my shoes for me, if I tell my children, I'm 40 years old, and thank God so far in good health, so please, let me put on my own shoes, you make me feel like I'm, you know, like I have problems or something, if you're putting on my shoes for me. So if they do that, that's a disrespect. Respect, right? So in that kind of mechila al kavodo, so it would be usur to go and give the kavod. But if it's a cup of water, I'm thirsty, and I come home and say, don't worry, I'll take care of it myself, and my kid goes and gets me the cup of water, so then that's not an isser. So what do you do with the hesped? Do you say that it's an isser? Meaning, why does the Pesachim Shuvah just say that's the answer? There's no isser to be maspid. It's just that kvodo machul. Is there any downside? I mean, is it hurtful to them in any way? So apparently it is. Apparently it is hurtful in some way, because there is an understanding that, and the poskim discussed this at length, about how in, if you look in that siman in Shulchan Aruch, in the Torah, in the Beis Yosef, in Shemem B'dalet, in Yerodea, that you're not allowed to lie by Hespedim, you're not allowed to say things that are over the top by Hespedim, because if you do that, it's bad for the neshama. Meaning, just as... So the halacha is you're allowed to exaggerate. And there's significant literature in the poskim why you'd be allowed to exaggerate. Isn't it an exaggeration, just a small lie? So why you... So some of the different suggestions offered by the poskim. Some of the poskim suggest, well, if you knew about certain Maisim Tovim, there are probably a few more that you didn't know about. So in your exaggeration, you're probably going to be closer to the truth than if you didn't exaggerate. Okay, now other suggestions also in the poskim why you're allowed to exaggerate. But you're not allowed to say that a person's a tzaddik if he wasn't a tzaddik. You're not allowed to say that, you're not allowed to say things that, you know, so why are you not allowed to do that? So one possibility is that the people at the Levaya are going to be looking at each other like, what? You know, that guy wasn't, you know. So that becomes a bizayon, meaning all these over-the-top compliments aren't a compliment anymore. It becomes a bizyonus for the person instead of a cover for the person. But it could also be that up in Shemayim, that it's going to be bizyonus, that they're looking, they're calling this guy a tzaddik. Well, let's see, let's check the ledgers, let's see what he really is. So it could be that it's hurtful for the neshama. In fact, with Rav Aaron Leib in particular, according to the pull-out section of Mishpacha this past week that had in Rav Aaron Leib, that Rav Aaron Leib never gave Hespedim either. Meaning he was against the whole notion of Hespedim. Either there's a siman in Shulchan Aruch about it, but he just thought it was like Chabad. Chabad doesn't do Hespedim because they're afraid of this, of exaggerating. They're afraid of going over the top and then it's going to be a problem. So he wouldn't give Hespedim because he said he thought it was bad for the neshama, that people are going to say something that the person is a tzaddik, or that the person, he thought it was bad for the neshama. So it wasn't, a lot of this tzava wasn't stam anivus. This was his shita. Meaning he held that it shouldn't be done. He held that it was going to be very embarrassing for him to be called a tzaddik when he held that he was beneath the level of a tzaddik. That was an actual shita of his. So it could be that, you know, that the mechila al kavodo over here is like the putting on shoes mechila al kavodo, where it would be usr to do, rather than the getting the drink of water mechila al kavodo, which would not be an isr, would just be something that was... That you're not obligated to do. So why taka though are we mekel then? Why does Pesachim Shuvah call all these gedolei Yisrael that are mekel? So Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky in Geshar Chaim in Perek Yud Gimel Os Gimel, he explains that there are two. He suggests that there are two elements of a hesped. There's the honoring the deceased by stressing their positive qualities. That's what we call hesped. And then there's allowing those who remain behind to internalize what they just lost. The loss that they suffered. He says that's what we call bechi. We have Avram lispod the sarah vilifkosa. Two things, hesped and bechi. So he suggests that a person is allowed to be mochel the honor that's due to him, the hesped. But the bechi, the chi of bechi on everybody else, that's still there. And therefore, that's not within the rights of the deceased to be mochel. People you still need to be ma'orer the bechi of the people. That's what Yechiel Michal Tukachinsky suggests. And based on that, he writes, a lot of people, he doesn't write this, but I saw in the introduction to the Tshuvas Binyan Sion, the newer editions that were put out, they have a whole biography of Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, and they write that even though Rav Yaakov Ettlinger also specifically said, do not eulogize me, people did it anyway, and they said the same svara, that they weren't doing it for him, they were doing it for themselves, that an orphaned generation should appreciate what they've been orphaned from, and therefore, Rav Yechiel Melechel Tukhachinsky points out, and this is quoted by other poskim as well, Minchas Elazar in Chelik Beisim and Samach Gimel, and Minchas Yitzchak in Chelik Tesim and Koflam and Hay, that the tone of the Hespedim should perhaps be a little different. Meaning, you're going to go, you're going to be maspitted like Rav Aaron Leib or Rav Yashiv or someone like that. You're going to say things that people couldn't possibly appreciate, that people couldn't possibly even understand what it means. We're so removed from that madrega of living. So, you know, it's not going to mean that much to my life in terms of inspiration because we're so removed from it. You know, it's like, you know, it's very hard to... There's certain gedolim you could tell stories about that will inspire, you know, talmidim, that will inspire regular people. You tell stories about the chesed of Rav Aaron Leib that inspires people. You tell about, you know, his relationship with Gashmius or lack thereof. It's very hard for that to inspire people because we're just so far removed from it. We have no sense of what that means. So what? When he was 99 years old, he was still sitting on a stool where his feet couldn't touch the floor, and he didn't own a couch or like a comfortable chair. Like, we can't, you know, sleeping on the same flat board. Like, what does that even mean? It's hard to be inspired by that because it's just so far, far removed from us. If what you're focusing is on Hesped, so yeah, you focus on that. That's Yakrat Deshichvi. He was a malach. That he was mamish living like a malach for over a century. Unbelievable. But if what you're looking for is the Bechi, that people should have an appreciation and an inspiration by his life, so then you want to relate to things that people can relate to. That's what these poskim suggest, that the point of emphasis maybe should be a different point of emphasis in the Hesped, because the Mechila is on the Hesped, but not on the Bechi. I hear the Vart, very hard to assume that that's correct, though. I mean, that's really the Pshat. Because usually, you know, if you're going to, especially when you're going to define Bechi as appreciating the gravity of the loss, so it's very hard to draw that line. Like, you're describing the person, you know, in a way that tells you who he is. So obviously then you're going to appreciate who he was, and you'll appreciate we just lost a Malach Hashem. We just lost someone who lived on a different level, and you appreciate that also. Meaning, I may not be inspired by the stories of his relationship to Gashmius to live similarly, right? But to appreciate that we lost something that we will probably never, ever see again, you know, that's something that I think we could all appreciate. Very hard to draw that line. So I'm not sure if that's, you know, the heter, but it should be noted that this was the, you know, this was the practice for centuries. And the assumption is that, you know, Gedolei Yisrael, perhaps, that it's not the individual. It's not about the individual. When the Hesped is about the individual, then and their own family and their own circle, their own inner circle, they have the right to be mochel. But maybe the assumption is that when dealing with Gedolei Yisrael, they belong to Klal Yisrael. They don't belong to themselves. And then maybe they don't have the right to be mochel. Maybe they lose that right to be mochel because they are sort of the property of Klal Yisrael. Just like their entire lives are dedicated to Klal Yisrael, in their deaths also, they belong to Klal Yisrael. So again, three possible svaras. Why to ignore the tzava? One possible svara is that the mechila, it doesn't make it usher to do, just that the, you know, you're not obligated to do. But we said that's difficult. That's difficult in the situation where you're talking about a hesped, where a taka could be bad for the neshama. Second possible svara, difference between hesped and bechi, and that's well grounded in many poskim, in the Sifrei poskim. Very difficult for me to understand exactly where to draw the line between Hesped and Bechi. And I thought maybe a third possible sfera, maybe this is the mashmos of the Pesachei Tshuva, is that Gedolei Yisrael are just different, because Gedolei Yisrael are the property of the Klal. So that is issue number one, yeah.
Could the Chakir, like Mar Sanhedrin, whether it's Hesped, like Hesped, Gakir,
Yeah.
Could that also be attributed also to Avelis in general? Like what the function, like Avelis.
So the Gemara has a separate discussion about Avelis also. So Hesped is one thing, Avelis is another thing. They're not necessarily connected. Right? Then the second issue, writing eulogy before someone is dead. I thought was interesting based on Rav Aaron Leib that the police were preparing a year and a half before he died for his patira. So, first of all, there's no shaila the police are allowed to do that, meaning that's pikuach nefesh. They were saving lives, and they did. They saved lives by doing, assuming that that story is true, they saved lives by doing what they did because we didn't see by Rav Aaron Leib what we saw by Rav Asner. So that's so there's no shaila they're allowed to do it. The question is, what about this fellow who wants to write the hesped for his 93-year-old grandfather who he loves very much, and he wants to give him a proper kavod acharon, but he knows that he's not going to have time to do it properly. So a couple of considerations. I've mentioned this to a number of people, and some people say, can't be that you're allowed to do such a thing. Meaning it's off-putting. Even if not forbidden, at least a little off-putting. Okay, I hear that. It may also be, if you want to get more technical, it may be a violation of Al Tiftach Pel L'Satan. The Gemara Maseches Brachos, Daf Yotes Amud Aleph, tells us that a tziduk hadin is to say, Ribono Olamim, Harbe Chatasi Lefanecha V'lo Nefrati Mimeni Echad Minei Aleph. That I've sinned so much and you haven't really punished me as much as I deserve or anywhere near what I deserve. So Amar Abaye lo mi boy leilinish lemeirachi says the Gemara in Brachos and Ksuvos. A person's not supposed to say things like that. Damar Reb Shimon Lakish chaytan Reshet Reb Yosi lo olam al yiftach adam piv l'satan. Don't say that you deserve worse or that you don't want to be posech pel satan. So you have poskim use that notion of posech pel satan in this kind of context also. To sort of like, the reverse ayin hara. You know, not that you're drawing attention to your success, but that you're drawing attention to the fact that you deserve worse. So that's posech pel satan. For example, in the Tshuvas HaParkasta Da'an Yechel Galvesim Kuf Tzadiyeh, he discusses a case where a woman bought a burial plot for herself, and her husband had died a number of years before that, but she bought a burial plot, she bought like a section of a cemetery for her entire family. Everyone was still alive, and it's okay, you're allowed to buy, it's a good idea actually, to buy a burial plot before you die, so that way the family doesn't have to be left holding the bag and often ripped off at the last minute because they're desperate because they need to bury somebody. It's much better if you take care of it in advance, and they therefore will be able when it's bought, it's done with Yishuv Hadas and taken care of already. But this woman bought a burial plot for her whole family. She wanted to have her husband's remains moved to the burial plot that she just bought for her whole family from wherever he was buried, and he would be the only one there. So that Prakasta Danya says it could be a problem of al tiftach pe, because he's going to be lonely. You know, he's going to be waiting for everybody. So you don't want to be posat fellow satan that he's waiting for everybody. Okay, so I hear the possibility of al tiftach pe. On the other hand, what exactly are you doing if you're preparing a hesped while the person is alive? All you're really doing is you're appreciating the person. Meaning you're looking at the person saying, what are his great qualities? That's what a hesped is. You're supposed to try to find a few defining qualities and elaborate on those qualities. You're not supposed to give every detail of everything the person had. A lot of people don't know this. You know, sometimes at a spade, and they go through, and this is what he ate for breakfast, and this is what he ate for, you know, like, you don't need to do that. You just go through some of the defining qualities of the person, and you elaborate on those qualities, and you're supposed to try to be ma'orer bechi, to get people to cry over the loss. So it's always a good idea to find the great qualities. What is the Mishnah? Ezu chacham? Hello, in Mikal Adam, that it's a wise person learns from everybody and tries to find all their great qualities. Not only that, it's also normal and healthy when someone is ill to start thinking about just how much they mean to you and what they've taught you and what their lessons are. And that's I was talking to Rav Sacks about this, and he said long before his mother passed away, he was contemplating the kinds of things that he would talk about. you know, about her. That that, you know, because Adrabba, that's the time to do it. When someone is ill, that you think about, you know, what they mean to you. And you know, Zach said maybe we should be writing a spadim for everybody, you know, for everybody we know. Meaning we should always be thinking about people's great qualities and thinking about their great value. The other svara that I thought of was that maybe preparing the hesped diminishes your tefillah. Meaning if you're davening that the person should have a refuah shleima, so is that tefillah really b'lev shalem when you're already preparing for their death?
Because then you're appreciating it.
Okay, maybe. So I thought that might depend on the machlokas Stipler and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach about whether you're supposed to pray for a person to live when there's no hope that they're going to live. Right, so it was discussed. If doctors have given up hope that a person could live, can you still daven? So majority of poskim, Mori Rabbi Rav Shachter certainly, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach also writes this way, and many, many others, the pashtus of the Gemara, is that you're not allowed to daven if it would take a miracle. Meaning if there's no more hope, and the doctor's no longer treating the person, they're just trying to keep them out of pain, then you can't daven for Refuah Shleima because that's davening for a nes. Does that mean God can't do it? No, of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do it. But it's a chutzpah for us to daven for that. You're not allowed to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do things for that. So if you don't have to be davening, believe Shalem, for the miracle of their their refuah, so then maybe you're allowed to, you know, we're less hesitant to allow you to prepare for the misa. The Stipler, however, held that afilu cherev chad munachas al ksefes l'adam al yimna atzmo min arachamim. You never stop. You always daven. You keep davening. So you so if that's the case, maybe preparing the hesped takes away a little bit from the tefillah b'lev shalem. On the other hand, like Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva about life insurance, about buying life insurance, there is no requirement to have bitachon that you're going to live forever. Because guess what? It's never really happened, except for very, very few, you know, Eliyahu HaNavi. Like, it doesn't really happen that people live forever. So you don't have to have bitachon that you're going to live forever. And you're allowed to, therefore, make preparations, like buying life insurance. That's a reasonable preparation that a person can make and should make, and all the Gedolei Yisrael paskin that a person is supposed to do. Oh, no, a better plan is, assume I'll live forever, and then if I don't, my family is going to be left with nothing, and the community is going to have to raise exorbitant sums of money to pay off my mortgage and to pay. So that's not a good plan. Much better plan is pay your $30 a month or whatever it is to get your term policy when you're 30, 40 years old. And God forbid, if a tragedy happens, your family is going to be taken care of. So this is just preparing for death is not a lack of bitachon, and it's not saying that I'm not going to be misspelled. Rav Shechter told us the story. I couldn't find the story anywhere. I asked Rav Sachs if he knew where the story is from. He told me he heard it from Rav Shechter, but he has no idea where the story is from. I have to ask Rav Shechter. I'll see him on Sunday, Be'ez Hashem. But he tells the story that when the Taz's wife died, the Taz gave an unbelievably good hesped, like a knockout hesped for his wife. And that the Bach, the Taz's father-in-law, was really upset at the Taz for giving such a good hesped, because he thought that there is no way that he prepared that hesped in the amount of time between, you know, that elapsed between her patira and the levaya. So maybe it's machlokas Bach and Taz, whether he let her write a hesped in advance, or maybe the Taz was just that good, he wrote such a hesped in advance. Rav Sachs's inclination was that there's nothing wrong with it, was that you could write the hesped. I thought you should definitely contemplate, you know, I don't know if I would put pen to paper and write on the top of the paper hesped for my your grandfather's going to be rummaging through the house by hesped. What's he doing? You know, it's like I was once at a cemetery I don't know if it was a yard site or whatever for someone in my wife's family. My wife, it must have been my wife's grandfather or grandmother. So I was there with my wife's uncle Julius Berman and her cousin Zev Berman. And Zev pointed out to his father that there was a tombstone that said Mr. Julius Berman. So he said, "Dad, you make a reservation?" So my uncle says, my uncle is very involved politically in a lot of different organizations and things. He says, "No, but I'm afraid others have made one for me." So the why did I tell that story? I have no idea why I tell that story. It's a good story. So, preparation for death. So you don't want the grandfather to find the hesped. You know, it's like a little off-putting. Like, you know, he goes to the garage and he sees a tombstone with his name on it. You know, just like a date. You know, left out. You don't want something like that. But to contemplate these things and think about the qualities of the person, that certainly I would think is appropriate.
According to a Shechter, that you shouldn't daven for the sick person. Can you daven that the pain should be?
Oh, for sure you're allowed to daven that they should be comfortable as possible. You should always daven. You should always daven. The question is what you're davening for. Right? The tefillah may be, Gam kelech v'geitz al maves lo yirah ki atayim adi, that we should be able to handle whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends our way. Of course. But the question is only whether you could daven for Refuah Shleima. Rav Zalman thought that to make massive tehillim gatherings for Refuah Shleima for somebody who's going to die by all natural, you know, by the natural order of the world, Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that's going to cause a weakness in people's bitachon, that people are going to lose sense of bitachon. Now, when I gave this Temer Halacha Shir, I got an email from my friend in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Reuven Mendelowitz, the author of Inside Stam. Did I tell you this story here? So maybe I mentioned it in Shir. He told me, he said that he knows somebody who sent who was married for 10 years, didn't have any children, and they didn't know what to do. They sent a note to Rav Chaim Kanievsky asking for Eitza. Rav Chaim wrote back four words: Ein harofim yodim klum. The doctors know nothing. That was the note back. What do you do with that? Well, at the bris, a year later, of their first child, they read that note and they showed it around. Rabbi Mendelowitz said he was at that bris. So I was obviously Rabbi Chaim Lashitas, his father, you know, the stipler, that you're allowed to, meaning why is it that you're allowed to daven for a Refuah Shleima when someone is, you know, when it would take a miracle? What, the stipler holds you're allowed to daven for a miracle against the Gemara? No, the stipler holds that Refuah is not called a miracle. Meaning, when it comes to refuah, we don't even begin to understand the human body. Whatever our understanding is of disease and of infertility, and we're just scratching the surface of understanding. So this type of thought that you're still allowed to daven for such things, because that's not called a miracle. Zilberstein wrote to me something very similar, that he thought that davening for refuah is never called a miracle. That's not called tefillah for an ace. To change the gender of a child, like the Mishnah says, that's an ace. But to daven for refuah, he thought is not an ace. Let's just get to question number three. We have 10 minutes left, so let's. And this, I am a little hesitant to talk about this because I'm not an expert in the details over here, and this isn't a pure halachic issue. But I think a little bit of perspective is necessary. The Rubashkin issue, the Metzias, as far as I understand it, and please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, was that Mr. Rubashkin definitely committed a crime as defined by American law. I think he was convicted for bank fraud. They couldn't get him on harboring illegal immigrants or anything like that, but he was convicted of a crime in the American legal system. Also, that's fact number one. Fact number two, the judge who sentenced him was involved in the planning of the raid on his company in the first place, and according to Dershowitz, that judge, by all ethical standards, should have recused herself from hearing that case because she was emotionally invested, because she was involved in the planning of the raid on these are facts, okay? Third, many former Justice Department officials and major people, senators, congressmen from across the political spectrum, Democrats, Republicans, believed that the punishment was excessive and said so. And you know, they had been pushing for this for a while. Another fact, President Trump commuted the sentence, but he was careful to say that he was not absolving Mr. Rubashkin of any guilt, and that Rubashkin still has to make reparations, and that the time served, it's not that the time served was a travesty, that the time served was sufficient, or more than sufficient, for the crime that was done. Another fact, last night there was a humongous party at 770. Thousands of people were there singing, dancing, getting drunk, hugging and kissing Mr. Rubashkin, v'chule v'chule. Now, the tzad to say that such a celebration is warranted is the following. When a Jew is singled out and punished excessively for being a Jew, which, okay, is that a fact or an opinion? It's an opinion, but it's pretty close to a fact. I mean, the idea that he would have...
The prosecution asked for 25 years. The judge
gave him 27, yeah. So the idea that someone would be singled out for... When a Jew is singled out and punished excessively because they're a Jew with a beard who's obviously Jewish or who... That relates to all of us, and that is a tzara for all of us. You may be able to say, yeah, but the person did an aveira, the person did something not right. When a Jew is singled out for being a Jew, that is something that relates to the Jewish people. And that's black and white. Similar to, what do we call it when you have a person... When you have a person, and this, it's a different case, I understand, but just as a mashal, you have a person who's not shomer Torah mitzvahs, let's say. It's not an observant Jew. They do averos. They eat chazer. They eat whatever, right? And they get killed for being a Jew. What do we call that person? A kadosh. Right? We call them a kadosh. Aye, but they're not frum. They did averos. Doesn't the Torah say the chayiv mis for being machal Shabbos? Doesn't you know? They're a kadosh because they're singled out for being a Jew. When someone is singled out for being a Jew and treated unfairly because they are a Jew, that affects the Jewish people. And that is an emotional issue for the entire Jewish people. Also, as Sachs pointed out to me this morning, and I think it's obvious, a just law that is applied in an unjust way is not justice, right? Meaning there may be laws about bank fraud and about other things that are just laws, but if the punishments are meted out in an unjust way, that is not the definition of justice. Dina de malchusa dina, chamsanusa de malchusa lav dina. When there are dinim that are just and that are applied to all members of society equally, yeah, then that's dina. Then we honor those dinim, and we wouldn't call a pidyon shvuyim to try to get someone out of jail if he's paying the price that someone should pay for the crimes that he committed. But if it's applied in an unjust way, so then that's chamsanus of the malchus, that's lav dina. We don't honor such dinim. Also, even though he committed a crime, and I don't know, did he admit or not, but even though he committed a crime, he more than did his time for the crime that was committed. And by secular standards, forget about by Jewish standards, by secular standards, once a person does his time, he deserves a second chance and a clean slate. Meaning he went through Gehenim. It wasn't pleasant to be away from his family and to be, and that's the system that's put in place so that he can now say I've suffered. I had my yisurin for that crime that was committed. Rav Shachter pointed out when he was first jailed, I asked him if there's a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim for someone who committed a crime. So he said, yeah, there's a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim for somebody who is being held in captivity because he's a Jew. Meaning, if it was standard and he was getting the right amount of punishment for the crime committed, there would be no mitzvah pidyon shvuyim. But there is. He said, look, if there were other shvuyim that required communal resources who were completely innocent, maybe they would come first, right? Maybe this wouldn't be the highest priority in pidyon shvuyim, but it is still the mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim. What's the tzad not to celebrate that? Meaning this is something that deeply affects emotionally the Jewish people, because this was someone who was singled out for being a Jew. So the tzad not to celebrate is two things. First of all, it's important that we not give the impression that we approve of the criminal activity. No matter minor, major, whatever you think of the criminal activity, we can't approve of criminal activity. And at least some of the people that were involved in the celebration, I would venture to say more than some, believe that he was an absolute tzaddik in every detail of this maisa, and therefore the criminal activity was not anything to be ashamed of or anything to, you know, that it's justified. So it's important to realize just in life in general that not everything is black and white. You know, he's a tzaddik, so that means he can never do anything wrong. It means he never did anything wrong. You know, people are complicated. People do things that are right and things that are... We all are complicated. I mean, thank God, most of us haven't had to pay the price for our mistakes that he had to pay for his mistakes. You know, and if we did, we'd be embarrassed also. But people are complicated. So people can do things that are wrong and still be good people. People can do things that are right and still be bad. You know, people have good and bad elements to them. And it's important for us to recognize a crime as a crime and nevertheless feel this elation that there was justice was finally served. He was unjustly punished because he's a Jew with a beard. And as fellow Jews, we have to be clear as day. We have to be happy about the fact that he was let free, but also clear as day, he did something wrong. Clear as day. Well, it's not that it's a gray area. It's black and white. It's black and white, both at the same time. You know, LaMarshall, Donald Trump, good guy or bad guy? Okay, so that's a way to divide a room, right? But the answer is, there are some things he has done, certainly recently, that were very, very good, like this, like, in my opinion, Yerushalayim. In my opinion, the tax laws also, but we're not going to get into the politics. There are certain things that he's done that are very, very good. He's a deeply flawed person. I think everyone could acknowledge that. A deeply, deeply flawed person. People are complicated. People who are deeply flawed can do good things, and people who are... So I don't think like it's a mitzvah to like take sides. And so the downside of this kind of celebration is it gives the impression to the people participating that there's nothing wrong with committing crimes. And that's problematic. The second downside is, what does it say to the rest of the world? Forget about to the people participating. If the rest of the world gets the impression that, you know, the Jewish people celebrate, you know, Orthodox Jews celebrate criminals, then that's a bad message to send. So how should it have been dealt with? Probably a more muted celebration. You know, certainly, you know, as Jews, we should feel a sense of great simcha that justice finally served, and that this travesty of justice was undone. But to take to the streets with that simcha, I don't know if that's appropriate. I would never blame Shalom Rabashkin or his family or friends for, you know, participating in that elation, because if you know the emotion he must have had, I can't even imagine. And then you come to 770 and there are thousands of people there. To get caught up in that moment, of course he's going to get caught up in that moment. But as a community, we probably could have done a better job of, you know, of celebrating in a more muted way. It should also be pointed out that sometimes the downtrodden of society, people who are in this kind of situation, have no one to advocate for them. He was very fortunate that there were people who were willing to fight the good fight for 8 years to advocate for him until this actually happened. And that's, you know, that's to the great credit of those people who were involved in doing that. So I think that the point is that we have to realize that crime is still crime, and we don't think it's okay to commit crimes. At the same time, when someone is singled out for being a Jew, that is a terrible, terrible thing. It's something that every Jew feels, and when that wrong is corrected, every Jew should feel a sense of elation at the correction of that wrong.
So we got the,